This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePaul. This week, we preview some upcoming concerts, including an innovative improvised chamber music concert and our vocal chamber music concert with Barbara Paré. We talk about jazz performance outside the School of Music, but still on campus at the Fluttering Duck. We answer the question, why are some singers called prima donnas? And we feature our organ professor Carla Edwards and her student Michael Conley talking about some interesting things happening in and around the campus on organ. There are lots of exciting things happening in the School of Music this week, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. Joining me to chat about our upcoming recital for the vocal chamber music class is Katie Owens. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Barbara Paré. Welcome.
Thank you.
Katie is a vocal performance and English writing major, and Barbara is on our voice faculty. So tell our audience, what is the vocal chamber music class?
Well, it is a class that involves singers and instrumentalists, and we perform once a semester. We meet once a week, and given who is in the class, I come up with repertoire for voice and instrument. And the students research the piece that is assigned to them and give, what would you call it?
A short presentation on the composer and whoever wrote the text.
Yes, and if there's anything interesting about the composer, for instance, if it's Bach, we all know the basic facts about Bach, so I try to encourage them to find something more interesting about the composer. And then the instrumentalists come into the class and we talk about ensemble and also how singing with an instrumentalist is a wonderful thing and it makes singing a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, what kind of instrumentalists or even small chamber groups might they have the opportunity to perform with?
Well, this semester we are doing an entire Bach cantata.
Oh my, wow.
So it is with string quartet and oboe.
Neat.
I should call this recital From Bach to Stravinsky, because we
that
are
just
literally
covers a small span of time, just
yes.
Bach to Stravinsky.
So we are literally going and everything in between, practically. The Stravinsky is with three clarinets and baritone. Mm. There are also unaccompanied pieces, so there's a clarinet and voice piece. And Katie is singing flute and voice and piano.
So Katie, what's that like? Do you typically have this experience?
Well, I've been in this class for four semesters now because I love it. It's probably my favorite music ensemble that I've participated in. What's best about it is that I get the opportunity to sing with an instrumentalist other than my typical accompanist. So I really have that experience to learn how to work with other instrumentalists, and rather than just kind of like relying on my accompanist following me as
right.
I sing.
Right, and that's an entirely unique challenge. I remember my trumpet teacher as an undergraduate talking to me. He was a principal of the National Symphony in D.C., and he would say, well, if I were singing with Adita Guberova, I would sound like this. But if I were singing, and he could change his tone and everything that he did based upon what was going on. So there's a lot more give and take, probably more than typically happens with a singer who's got their accompanist who's there to make them look good and follow them.
Yeah, I've definitely learned how to communicate with my body and my face, and I've learned how to like show what my intent is rather than just hoping that they will be following me.
So have you ever had the situation where you felt like these two instruments, your voice and the other instrument or instruments, didn't work together? That was more challenging than others to try to work it out? Or has it always just come naturally? Or
I find that I work very well with flute. but one of the first piece that I did in this class, I worked with clarinet, and that was a little more difficult to achieve a balance in both of our tones, really, because I got a little more strident sounding working with a clarinet.
And so you hear them performing in a given evening, you'll hear all of these different instruments with different students?
I try and arrange it so that they can perform in class three times a semester. And then if we need extra time, we come up with private coachings with me and with whoever is accompanying the class. But I come up with a schedule at the beginning of the semester so that they have sung three times in class in front of the class with their instrumentalists, And then we will have a dress rehearsal on Monday night in Thompson, where we go through the entire program before the recital.
And so are these friends of yours? Do you meet these people in the process? How does that work? I mean, when you're performing suddenly with a new instrumentalist, is this someone you knew beforehand? Or are you?
It has kind of depended on the semester, but it has allowed me an opportunity to meet other instrumentalists that I wouldn't have met in the school of music if I wasn't taking this class. So that's been really great, just making the school of music feel even more like one big happy family.
Yeah, one of my big goals. Well, thank you for joining us to chat about this. The recital is April 22nd at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a 5-pound note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are.
I'm Jennifer Wilson, and I'm giving my senior voice recital on April 22nd at 1 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Hope to see you there.
Hi, my name is Phil Pasqua, and I am a co-producer of the Music for Life radio show. And here today, I am with Dr. McCoy, and we are going to be talking about the recital hour and the philosophy behind it.
So you're turning the tables on me. I'm the interviewee instead of the interviewer.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I think everyone knows that we now have a weekly recital hour for the School of Music. It happens every Wednesday at 10:30 in the morning, and it's an hour recital that's kind of a mix of different studios and an opportunity to hear a wide variety of individual performers and chamber music. So it's a great opportunity for us to come together. And this is new for us at DePauw. It's something that we just started this semester, and the reasoning behind it was actually multifold. First of all, we're a performance institution. Students have to have the opportunity to perform.
Exactly.
And so
yeah.
The more opportunities they have to do that, the better. Also, performing is a scary thing to do. And so when you're doing it in front of the general public, that's one type of audience. But when you're doing it in front of your colleagues, who also are going to be doing the very same thing, the audience tends to be a little more sympathetic. And it's a great opportunity for us to get our performance chops in front of a sympathetic audience and a very receptive one. It's also a chance for us to come together as a school. It's a chance for us to be together as a group, faculty and student alike, which is rare. And it's a great opportunity for us to get the sense of who we really are. And then finally, it's a chance for community folks, liberal arts folks who would like a little music in the middle of the day to come by and hear what goes on. So I've been really thrilled with the response to this so far.
Yeah, I definitely thought the recital hour has been a very productive event in the School of Music. It brings a lot of students together, and a lot of kids find that there's more opportunities to receive constructive criticism, perform, and just develop as a musician.
Yeah, right, definitely. And get to know each other. I mean, you know, it's funny. People have said to me, wow, I didn't know this person played that instrument or sang this voice part or whatever.
Exactly. I was always wondering what certain people were playing in the repertoire. So it was great to finally see what they're up to.
Yeah, so that's a great opportunity. And then one final great thing we've used it for is all these visitors. You know, we had Music of the 21st Century Joseph Schwantner here, which was exciting, and had a venue for him to come to speak to the entire school. And we've had other guests that have come in, alumni that have come back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great experience.
Well, it was great talking to you about Recital Hour, and I hope everyone would be able to take the opportunity to come to Recital Hour on Wednesdays at 10:30.
In Thompson. Thanks.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Ellen Mangan, and I'm a harpist. I'm giving my senior recital on Sunday, April 29th at 3 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Hope to see you there.
Joining me for the Question You Never Asked segment is Music for Life staff member Anna Gadula. Welcome.
Hello.
So what's our question this week?
The question this week is, why are some singers called prima donnas?
Some singers, meaning female singers.
Right. Because in Italian, prima donna means first lady.
So does that mean that she's married to the president?
No, it means that she's the lead female singer in said opera.
We have a kind of negative connotation to prima donna now, don't we?
We do. The reason we have a negative connotation for prima donna is because the first lady, or the lead soprano usually, was the one who brought in the audience because she had, you know, a good fan base. So she brought in the money for the opera production. So naturally, the people putting on the opera will do whatever the prima donna wants them to do.
Carry her around on a pillow, peel her grapes.
Right. So, you know, as time went on, they kind of realized that they can ask for more things if they're the prima donna. So
right. There's a lot
now we have a negative connotation.
Yeah, and there's been some interesting stories about prima donnas and how it has not gone very well with some of them. In fact, some of the greatest singers we have in America today don't necessarily have a great reputation as being easy to get along with, right? There's a couple that spring to mind that are particularly problematic. One is Kathleen Battle, who some people think was given the proper last name because of the battle she's constantly in. I believe she was banned from the Met at one point. Mm-hmm. She at one point refused to sing with the Boston Symphony because she wanted to ban the assistant conductor and certain musicians in the orchestra from the rehearsal. And then you have Angela Gheorghiu, who seems to be getting in trouble on both sides of the pond. she's a remarkable woman, but has been also banned from the Met and I think was also ditched in Chicago. And oftentimes for their temper tantrums. And the fact is, these folks are incredibly talented singers.
Right, right.
And when you read interviews about them, they seem to be pretty normal people and even kind in some ways. But it just doesn't seem to play that way in the press.
Right.
So prima donna has a pretty negative... Has it always been that way?
No. There are some prima donnas like Maria Callas and Renata Tebaldi who were actually very good friends. And despite their friendship, they had separate fan clubs. And it just all depends on kind of how your fans play it out, I guess.
And this word is often used synonymously with diva.
Right.
Diva actually... is Italian for deity, this goddess. You know.
Right.
So you're the prima donna, the first lady. You bring in the bucks, and because you bring in the crowd, or you're even more than that. You're a diva because you're godlike in your
goddess
approach. Yes, you're a
goddess
of music. There you go. These are all remarkable singers, but we have a real conundrum on our hands because prima donnas are fantastic people,
right?
And often have a negative reputation. In fact, for those of you who are familiar with Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera, there's a very funny song in it called Prima Donna, First Lady of the Stage, and it's all of the things they're willing to do to keep the right person on the bus, as it were. Well, thanks for joining us, and are you a prima donna?
No,
Just checking. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Zach Phillips and I play the violin. I'm giving my senior recital on April 29th at 1 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. I hope to see you there.
A new tradition here in the DePauw School of Music is a weekly recital hour on Wednesday mornings at 10:30. And last week we had a remarkable performance of a new work, a suite for solo viola, and it was a great work for many reasons, not the least of which is that it was actually written by one of our own students, Will Bertheau, who we've welcomed to the studio now. Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell me about this. You're a violist and a BMA yes. major.
Yes.
And you've been composing for...
8 years.
8 years. And viola being your instrument, it would make logical sense that you write this work. Mm-hmm. Is this a new work?
I wrote it early last semester.
How did it come about? What prompted you to write it?
Well, any solo work, I think, is derivative from Bach's cello suite. That was the primary inspiration, and I wrote it for viola because I play viola.
So was this after you heard Yo-Yo Ma playing the Bach cello suites, or was this before that?
It was before I heard Yo-Yo Ma.
Yeah, of course, hearing Yo-Yo Ma play the Bach cello suites just doesn't get much better than that. No. And we're all, of course, following in the shadow of the masters. So you decided to compose mm-hmm. a solo suite for viola. Did you sit down and start doing it? Or
no. Late last year, I played a set of viola suites by Max Reger.
Mm.
That was also an inspiration to write my own suites for viola.
And so early in the fall, you decided to sit down and write this. And then you actually had your teacher, one of our professors, perform it. How did that come about?
I asked her to look at it, really just to get some input. I didn't actually anticipate that she would perform it.
Dr. Brockman picked it up, looked at it in the studio, and what'd she tell you about it?
She offered to play it. It was one of the first things she said. I got some feedback on melody and harmony.
And she just took off from there.
She just took off from there.
So tell me a little bit about the piece. How did you decide that it was going to be three movements? Could have been one, could have been ten. What were you thinking there?
It's actually five movements. She only played first three.
I see. Okay. Are the other two movements
finished
as well?
Yes, they're complete.
So how did you come to five?
It's partially modeled also, again, on the Bach suites, mm-hmm. although those have six. I tried to include variation in tempo and feel, rhythm. I didn't want four. I wanted to have a center,
right.
So I thought five. Three felt too few.
And four wouldn't work because mm-hmm. it's too symmetrical, so five yes. makes the perfect number.
Yes.
And so the third movement is?
It's a moderato movement.
Nice quiet movement in the middle.
Yeah.
I see.
Which was the last movement that was played.
Right. And have you played it yourself publicly?
No, I have not played it publicly.
So do you share your music with your friends, or what do you do with your music?
I do share it. I share it with friends and some professors to get input, just to see what I could do better, especially if I'm writing for an instrument that I don't play.
Mm-hmm.
I share it with friends who do play that instrument.
Right. How many works have you composed?
Quite a few. I don't really know.
Start those little opus numbers, you know. Keep track that way.
I thought about it. I'd have to go back retroactively.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough works that it would take a while to number them.
Right. And are you always composing?
Almost always.
What are you working on now?
I'm writing a piece for string orchestra.
And how's that coming?
It's not very far along. It's maybe less than a quarter done.
So when can we expect to hear that on the stages here at DePauw?
I have no idea. Hopefully I'll be done with it before I graduate, but I don't know.
Yeah, you can't guess these kinds of things.
No.
Until you start taking commissions, and then you have these deadlines that are absolutely hard, and you've got to live by the deadlines. Well, it's been great to have you in the studio here, and let's hear a bit of this suite for solo viola in C minor.
Thank you.
On Tuesday, April 17th at 7:30 in Kresge. Now, often our recitals are in Thompson, but this one is in Kresge because the audience will be on the stage. So Tuesday, April 17th at 7:30 in Kresge, we will have an improvised chamber music recital. Joining me to talk about that is Adam Gardner, Juliana Barraza, and Ellen Mangan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, this is unusual. What is an improvised chamber music ensemble?
There's 12 players, and we all play our instruments or sing or do percussion, and we just play whatever comes to our heads, and it generally is tonal or really crazy. It can go in any direction.
Last semester, we would try a few different improv games with music, and we would have trios or duets, and we would have a theme. For instance, do as much as possible from as little as possible. So we would focus on playing very few notes, but really putting our expression into it and making the most music from the least doing, actually.
Mm. When most people think of improvisation, that is kind of a spontaneous composition. They think about it in the jazz idiom. In the jazz world, outside of third stream, there are rules that go into this improvisation. So the rhythm section is playing a set of chord changes, and the bass line is a bass line, and the improvisers are improvising upon an already established tune, an already established bass line, an already established chord structure. So even though it's improvisation, there are kind of some limiting features. You can't just do just anything you want to. Mm-hmm. In an improvised chamber ensemble, what are those limiting factors?
It's led by Dr. Eric Edberg, and he will give us different restrictions, like the four of you will play together and do one note and improvise off of one note, or we're going to get the three of you together. Ellen, you're going to start a bass line. Adam, you're going to create some harmony. Juliana, you're going to add melody. And then maybe within that, if we're all in a circle, somebody else will stand up and take someone's spot. So we'll practice just different games like that. But for this semester, we've really been focusing on just getting in a circle, creating that warm environment with different exercises so that we all feel very comfortable. And then Dr. Edberg will act as a leader, and either we start with drones, and then he'll pick out someone to add some melody, and then however you feel.
What keeps you, if this, let's suppose that somehow the drone or the pitch center is hanging out around G, what keeps you from going off on A flat? You know, there's no limit there. So what keeps you from these unintended, or maybe even intended, but what keeps you from these harsh dissonances?
Nothing.
Nothing.
So dissonances are cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the greatest lessons I've learned is that you can't be wrong.
Yeah, I think it was Miles Davis that said, in improvisation, you're always only a half step away from where you need to be. So you can't really be wrong. And it might have also been him that said, if you make a mistake, because in jazz improv, technically you can, you know, you can pick notes that don't belong in the chord or whatever, just repeat it, because then it looks like you meant it.
Right.
And pretty soon your ear will quickly adapt to the fact that, wow, that's really dissonant, but they're repeating it, so they must have meant it, and therefore we go on. You guys do that too?
Sometimes when we play it, it's not the intended sound that we heard in our heads. Mm-hmm. And if we have something we'd like to say musically, and when we play it, it doesn't come out that way, we just kind of go with whatever came out, and we work off of that, and we listen to each other, and everyone kind of hears the sounds that are just coming out and whatever we're feeling.
So here's a crazy question. Now, you guys are all classical musicians. Your instrument is cello, you are flute, and you are harp. Why are you doing this? What's ultimately, I mean, what have you learned from it, or what's the purpose of it? What's the goal of it? This is unusual. What are you doing? Why?
I've learned a lot from this. To begin with, I mean, classically speaking, my ear has developed a lot. I can hear things a lot better, and I can actually play melodies that I hear in my head or that I've heard on the radio just by thinking about it now. Whereas before, I had a hard time doing that even after musicianship classes.
Oh, great. So it develops your ear.
Yes. It also helps me with creativity. I've noticed that my musicality and my solo pieces has grown a lot as well over the past year since I started a year ago with the improv ensemble.
Juliana, what do you think?
For me, it's actually gotten me a lot closer to my instrument and closer to the sounds that I make with it, that sometimes when I'm playing classical music and I'm focused on reading the notes on the page, following the rules of dynamics, articulations, I just get so focused on not making a mistake and being right. And in improv, when I play, I learn all the different sounds. Like, I hear it so much better because that is all that I'm, that's all that I'm doing. I'm only making the sound. And so I'm not focusing on all of these rules. And I've experienced new sounds I can make with the flute that I wasn't aware that I could do, extended, just different techniques. Mm-hmm. So it's really been gaining awareness of what I'm really capable of.
Now, there's a sense in which this is similar to singing in the shower. You know, when you think about it, what you do in a practice room, you know, you're developing a craft. There's music in front of you. You know the goals. There are, as best as can be rendered with an ink pen on a page, there are definitions of what you're supposed to do and volume and articulation and shape and the like. But when you're singing in the shower, you're just expressing yourself. This is nothing. This is not any of those things. This is just us expressing ourselves. You know, it's always fun for me to pull up at a stoplight and see the person next to me catch them. You know, they notice I caught them singing at the top of their lungs along with something. That's just self-expression. And that's what I think this does. Once we've freed ourselves from the tyranny of the page, now we can really become closer to our music. This is a great opportunity. I look forward to hearing your performance. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Phil Morgan, and I sing tenor. I'm giving my senior recital on April 22nd at 5 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. Hope to see you there.
For our 5-minute iPod segment, we have our organ professor, Dr. Carla Edwards, is joining us. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for asking.
So you're stuck on a desert island, and you've got an iPod, and it's defective. It only plays 5 minutes. What's on it?
Well, it's interesting to think about because, I mean, I have a lot of favorite pieces in the moment that range everywhere from romantic to classical to jazz to everything else. Mm-hmm. But if I had to be stuck with one piece, it would be the final trio from Rosenkavalier by Richard Strauss.
Ah, great choice. Now, why?
It has everything. It's got love and betrayed love and idealistic love and singing and orchestration and oh, it's just... It's one of those pieces that for me, if I'm in a bad mood, it makes me cry. If in a good mood, it makes me cry. If, you know, it just, it has everything. And it is just what I listen to when I need to be filled back up again.
You know, the 5-minute iPod segment was an idea the staff came up with to try to see kind of as our answer of what's on your iPod. And The answers have been remarkable and none more exciting than this one. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
We have a wide variety of majors here at DePauw, and one of our primary instruments that is not often taught in all schools of music is the organ. We're fortunate to have a junior organ student here with me. Welcome, Michael Conley.
Thank you, sir.
Michael is a music ed major, but organ is his primary instrument, and Organ is starting great demand these days, it seems like. You guys,
it seems like, yeah.
Yeah, you could probably have 7 gigs every Sunday, couldn't you?
If I wanted to.
Yeah, if you were that crazy. Mm-hmm. Here at DePauw, you have some really great organs to play on. The Kresge organ, I guess, is the best of them.
That is true. That is true.
Significantly so. And so do you practice on that organ?
I do. I tend to practice only there just because it's hard to adjust from the practice organs to the organs of Kresge. But we do have 2 practice organs available in the practice rooms and 1 in Thompson that's nice to practice on occasionally if Kresge's taken up.
Although the Kresge organ really can't be matched, I'd
right,
say.
That's correct.
That's a massive organ.
Yes.
On the show, we often talk about students who are performing outside of the School of Music, and you do perform regularly outside of the School of Music because you are the organist at Goeben United Methodist Church.
Yes, that's true. Each Sunday.
Every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that's right here practically on the campus. In fact, Goeben was at one point part of the campus. I know we used it as a regular meeting place. And
yes.
So how did this come about that you are the...
P.T. Wilson, who's the pastor over there, contacted me because he knew that Esther Shim was going to be leaving, who was the organist prior to me. Mm-hmm. And we met. I've played some for him on the organ. I played some for him on the piano. And he invited me to become the organist there.
And how long have you been doing that?
It'll be a full year after this semester.
And then that's opened up some doors for you for performance spaces there as
that's
well,
correct.
Because even your vocal group.
Les Chanteurs.
Yeah.
Sings there for rehearsals and things like that, yes. Yeah.
DePauw students seem to avail themselves of that space to perform. And of course, Dr. Edberg's Summer Music Festival is there.
Right. It's a nice space to sing in. The church itself, it's a lot of stone, so it's nice to have the sound just kind of bounce along.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. It reminds me of a European church on the inside.
Yeah, almost, yeah.
So how's the organ?
It's okay.
And I bet it sounds great in that space.
Yeah, it does. The larger sounds much more so than the softer sounds, but yes, it does sound pretty good in the
space. So you're probably spoiled by the Kresge organ, then you go out on
Sundays. Kresge organ, and I was raised on an organ almost twice the size of Kresge at my home church in Indianapolis. And I've been spoiled by the great organs I've been playing.
And you were just in Indy doing a little dueling organ.
Yes, I was.
Tell me about that.
My former organ teacher of 5 years asked me to come in, and with him, a colleague from Atlanta, and the assistant music director at St. Luke's Methodist Church in Indianapolis, we put on a dueling organist concert. They brought in another electronic organ. They hooked it up. They had speakers around the sanctuary, and we played all organ duets.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
I played Stars and Stripes Forever as an organ duet with Charles Manning, the assistant director at St.
Luke's.
Which
one of you got the piccolo part?
Me.
Oh, okay. Good.
Me, yes. Yeah. That was special to learn. And then we did a new piece by Stephen Paulus that took a lot of work to get an ensemble going with the other organ playing as well. And we all 4 did a number at the end with 2 on one organ and then the other 2 on the other organ.
Oh, my gosh.
It was great.
Wow, that's more organ than most people would hear in a lifetime.
Correct.
All in one afternoon.
Yes.
That's terrific.
Yes.
I think people are often surprised to find out that we have so many great instruments, for one thing, but also so many opportunities for people to play. Do you keep the Goeben job even in the summer?
I do.
And so you drive back from Indiana?
I do, but I do keep it just because I do like the job a lot.
And is this something you'll continue to do after you graduate? You'll continue to be a church organist?
Yes, I do think that I'll always be church organist.
I think you'll always be in high demand. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Good to chat with you.
Thank you.
So we had the opportunity to hear Professor Edwards' 5-minute iPod, and then we had the opportunity to hear a conversation with one of her students. So why don't we take the opportunity now to hear a little of her performance. This is from a recently released CD on the Raven label. The title of the new CD is Homage. This CD was recorded here in Kresge Auditorium on our J. Stanford Smith organ, and it is available on ravencd.com. This is the Passacaglia, BUXWV 161, of Dietrich Buxtehude from that CD.
Hi, I'm Phil Pasqua, and I play the double bass. I'm giving my junior recital on Thursday, April 26th at 7:30 in Thompson Recital Hall. Hope to see you there.
Joining me in the studio is senior trombone performance major Nick Miners. Welcome.
Hello.
We have a lot of interesting things going on in the jazz world here at DePauw, and one of the unusual aspects of our jazz program is the fact that we have a jazz club on campus. It's called The Duck, The Fluttering Duck. It's been around for many, many years in many different guises. Right. But every Thursday night, we have Jazz at the Duck. As part of that, we have visiting guests that come in and perform, but we also have the opportunity for our own students to perform. Tell us about that.
Pretty much every other Thursday, we have a faculty rhythm section, basically, and that's Sandy Williams, Rick Provine, who's over at the library, Veronica Pedrell, and then Bill, who's from town. He's the only one that's not a faculty professor. Mm-hmm. They're all great musicians, and it gives students the opportunity to bring music, or if they just have a real book, they can come to the Duck starting at 8:30, and if they want to play, if they have a song that they've composed, or they have a song that they just want to do, if they can bring in the music, they can come and jam with some great musicians.
Now, this is one of the exciting things about jazz music, is you can walk into any club in the world and not be able to speak a word together, you know, no common language whatsoever, and someone kick up the blues and off we go.
Right.
Or someone call a tune, just play a little bit of the head of So What, and everybody jumps right on board and knows exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
And so this is a great opportunity for students because you have a professional rhythm section behind you, in effect. One of the big challenges about trying to get your jazz chops together is that in the undergraduate world, while you're trying to get your jazz chops together as a soloist, the rhythm section is still undergraduates and trying to get their chops together as a rhythm section. That makes it hard to solo. This takes that totally out of the picture because now you've got the pros in behind you and in you walk. This seems to have a great following.
Yeah, there's a big variety of people that'll come. Sometimes there's a lot of people there. Sometimes it's just people from town. Sometimes it's a lot of students. And then as the night goes on, it'll get pretty crowded. It'll get pretty loud, which is fun. You know, sometimes it's not about the music, and sometimes it's about the bar. And sometimes it's all about the music, and it just depends on the night.
What's the time frame? What time does this start?
8:30, and it goes till 11:30.
Yeah, and the great thing about it starting at 8:30 is that you can catch a recital here, you know, that starts at 7:30. They typically last about an hour. 8:30, that recital's over. You can go over and have a glass of wine and catch the jazz scene. Really, it's a remarkable opportunity. So what kinds of groups have you performed with there?
At the Duck, we generally, it's just kind of the impromptu players who want to jam.
So how many people might you have? You might have as few as...
Sometimes it's just me, and then the
rhythm
section. And
it turns into as many as...
As many as... we've had like 6 or 7 people up there at one time. Because, you know, you have all the freshmen that come, and it's great. But we've had the whole jazz band there. We've had jazz combos there several times. And there's a few jazz combos, so we'll kind of take turns.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. I was coming out of a recital last Thursday night, and I heard some community members who were coming out. They were not otherwise affiliated with the university. They came walking out, and I heard them carrying on a conversation down the hall. So are you off to the Duck? Yes, I'll see you at the Duck. Okay, save me a table. You know, so it was interesting that people really have come to love this thing. Now, you also play in a lot of different jazz groups here at DePauw, besides the pickup opportunity that you have there and when we take groups there to play. So what else do you play jazz in here?
For the most part, it's just the big band, the jazz ensemble, and then the jazz combo that's led by Randy Salmon. But then it's kind of whatever I can find to do.
Right, you've got a recital coming up here.
Next Wednesday.
What time?
April 18th at 7:30.
In Thompson.
Right, in Thompson Recital Hall.
Now, so here's a trombone senior recital, trombone performance senior recital, but it also includes some jazz, is that right?
That's true.
So tell me what you're doing there.
So we're doing a piece, it's kind of known as the trombonist anthem, I think, throughout the country. It's called Brooklyn, and it's performed by Youngblood Brass Band. A lot of people might not know the name of the piece, but you've probably heard marching bands or pep bands play arrangements of it even. It's just a great piece for the trombone, and it's a really great piece just to get a few people together and just wail on, basically.
So what all will you be? Is that the one jazz piece on your senior recital?
That'll be the one strictly jazz piece, because everything else, I can only do so much ensemble music from our recital. But I do have another piece that's kind of a jazzy influence. It runs a range from Mozart bassoon concerto to this Brooklyn piece.
Very cool. So a wide variety of music there that you can catch and see the talent of one of our senior music performance majors. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up our show this week, and we're glad you could join us at Music for Life, Music from DePauw. Our student producers are Sam Crocker, Adam Luman, Anna Gadula, and Phil Pasqua. Our show is produced and engineered by Matthew Champagne and recorded live in Studio B of the Green Center for the Performing Arts. I'm Mark McCoy. I'm the executive producer of Music for Life and Dean of the School of Music. And we're glad you could join us once again, and we hope that you'll join us next Sunday night at 6 p.m. on WGRE for Music for Life. You can also catch us on the podcast, available at iTunes, and you can email us at musicforlife@depauw.edu. Wrapping up this week, we'll play just a little segment of Brooklyn that we recorded live in Thompson during our weekly recital hour at 10:30, featuring Nick. Thanks for joining us.
It's Music for Life.